two big surprises today that financial markets did not see coming. One is helping stock markets, at least early today.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Like a Halloween ghoul jumping out of nowhere with a pile of candy, Japan's central bank, the Bank of Japan, announced it's radically increasing its economic stimulus program. It's an effort to stop deflation and to counteract a hike in the sales tax that depressed consumers in Japan. Up went Japan's Nikkei stock index by 4.8%. That's like the Dow going up 825 points. And there were other consequences, says Christopher Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial in New York.
Just after the BOJ's announcement, the government pension announced that they're going to reduce bond holdings and increase holdings of stocks and foreign investments. The reason is that all this QE has driven interest rates in Japan well below 1%. That's not enough income to cover that pension's obligations. So even the government has to look elsewhere.
So in Japan, the direction of interest rates is lower still. Contrast this with the news from Russia this morning. They put up interest rates more than people were expecting.
This was a real shock. The point here is that capital has been fleeing Russia, and that's causing the ruble to decline. The ruble's declined so much that consumer prices are rising at a double-digit rate. The hope is that higher interest rates will entice capital back into the country, stemming the drop in the ruble. Judging from the chart I'm looking at right now, it worked for about an hour this morning.
You know, all this amid economic sanctions.
And a climate where lawmakers are working on legislation that allows them to seize foreign investments.
And people tend to want to remove them from the country in that environment. Christopher Lowe at FTN Financial, thank you very much.
You're welcome, David.
Note that consumer spending in the U.S. fell unexpectedly today, down 0.2% in September. That's the first drop since January and came despite an increase in personal incomes for the month. Former Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner's book about his central role fighting the fire of the great financial crisis ran nearly 600 pages. But what do we know about memoir writing? Authors always leave something out. Now documents have come to light showing Geithner in less politic moments. The papers emerged amid a lawsuit against the government by investors in the insurance company AIG, who did not like how Geithner and the rest of the feds handled the 2008 bailout. The ProPublica reporter with the documents is Jeff Girth. Morning, Jeff.
Good morning.
I was reading through some of the stuff that you have, and Mr. Geithner sounds a bit like an administration critic, really.
That's what's so striking about the material is that he, of course, was the chief architect of the rescue for the Obama administration as Secretary of Treasury and the one who had to go up to the Hill all the time and testify and be the defender. And Geithner is more critical in these private conversations and papers about the enforcement response and some of the mortgage relief and mortgage fraud programs that didn't turn out to be as quick or as deep as he had hoped.
Well, in the case of the mortgage fraud stuff, he suggests that some of the remedies didn't help real people out there as much as he'd like.
Right. I mean, in essence, what was happening, as he describes it, is that monies were going to people who were investors or shareholders in some of the mortgage-backed securities, but not enough relief was going to homeowners themselves who may have been the victims of fraudulent mortgages.
You can read all about it in Jeff Girth's piece in ProPublica. Mr. Girth, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We tweeted the link to the ProPublica piece at Marketplace. What might next Tuesday's midterm elections mean for the economy, jobs, and businesses? We have been calling our sources. Today, Corey Bowles, a senior U.S. analyst at a business consulting firm called the Eurasia Group. Mr. Bowles, good morning.
Morning, David.
Unlike some others, your outfit is predicting that Democrats maintain control of the U.S. Senate, just barely, and that Republicans keep control of the House, which is the conventional wisdom these days. Where do you think this might leave policy in Washington?
Well, I'm afraid that we think that if the status quo is a result of the election, that there's going to be just more gridlock. Unlike the gridlock that characterized Washington through 2011 through 2013, where you saw these series of manufactured crises, be it over government funding or the debt ceiling. We think Congress is going to more or less not do much, but leave the economy to get on being fairly robust, as the U.S. economy is just now.
Now, the U.S. economy is at its strongest point since certainly President Obama came in office. Normally, this could help people who are already in office, the incumbents, but some are saying this election isn't about the economy this time somehow.
Normally, the incumbent, the White House, should be gaining a lot of credit for the strength of the economy. But because this president is deeply unpopular, particularly so in these states where the most closely contested Senate races are occurring, he's almost been a persona non grata on the campaign trail.
Now, our beat here on the show is business. That involves trade. Corey, what's your view on what might happen to trade policy after this election?
I think it's one of the few areas that, regardless of the outcome of the election, you could see some advancement. There is, of course, this major pending trade pact called the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is a deal with 12 Pacific Rim nations. The rub is, as for most things, Congress would have to ratify it. If Democrats can maintain control of the Senate, it's going to be a heavy lift. If Republicans control all of Congress, ironically, it's much easier, I think, to get this done. Republicans, of course, are generally speaking more favorable towards trade. And even though they don't want to give the president a victory, they would be willing to do so in this context, I think.
Corey Bowles is senior U.S. analyst at Eurasia Group, which puts political scientists to work following world issues of interest to businesses. Mr. Bowles, thank you.
Thank you, David.
One industry that's watching closely how many Republicans and Democrats we end up with after Tuesday, energy companies from oil to solar. I've got a conversation about that lined up for Monday in New York. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.